want to talk to you this morning about barriers. I hope you want to listen to it. We have a consistent, continual problem in auditing, which is an unchanged tone level. Now, I talk a lot about changing ideas as the super manifestation of the progress of a case, whether or not it can change its ideas. Well, you know, there are case levels where the individual hasn't got any more chance of changing his ideas than a hound dog has changing his ears. The problem is one of barriers. This was brought to my attention several times recently by auditors, that cases seem to be hanging up along a certain tone level and didn't progress above this tone level. One of these auditors, she's an FSCN, she knows what she's doing. She asked a bunch of auditors about this, and these people all had the same complaint. Well, it's not possible to take the 80 doctors of Scientology who have gone through this course and the innumerable numbers of HCAs around and punch in their heads. But guy feels like it once in a while when he realizes that an essential piece of communication relating to Dianetics and Scientology hasn't gotten through. So this time, let's get this communication through. And along all future courses, and students, so forth, let's drive on it pretty hard, because it's evidently one that gets missed. So from here on, let's not miss on this. And from here on, let's change the tone level of the individual. Got that? Change his tone level. Talks about it in book one. Actually talks about it in Scientology, a New Science, 1947. Talked about it for years and years and years. Well, let's take a much more searching look at the tone scale. Scientology 8008 goes into this matter pretty well. The doctorate tapes, which you may have heard, may not hear, because they're not in general circulation, quite old now, carry forward the whole theme of ridges and dispersals and flows, and take the tone scale apart to demonstrate that each one of the emotional tones is itself either a flow, which is to say a dispersal or flow, or a ridge. What do you mean by a ridge? A nuclear physicist would understand this with the phrase standing wave, the impossible electronic manifestation which a nuclear physicist of recent years has only begun to dream of, is accomplished with great ease by the Thetan. A standing electronic wave. A standing wave, that is to say, a motionless mass of particles. Now, this is matter in formation. When a set of particles become motionless, they are condensing. And as they continue to condense, they eventually get into a circumstance where they create matter. Now, you could take a great number of flows flying loosely in all directions, particles, condense them down, you would get a mass of energy, and this would be a ridge. Now, as we look at a preclear, we discover that he is surrounded, if his case is not moving easily, by these ridges. He is on his way toward becoming a solid object. What is matter? Matter could be said to be a complete, rigid condensation of particles. If we were to take a chair and blow it all apart, we would find out that its individual energy impulses would go into a flow or a dispersal. And if we were to take all these particles and push them back again into the form of the chair, we would have a condensation. Now, if we could understand the preclear as somebody with a chair over his head, we could see immediately that we have a problem where condensation has set in, and it's the auditor's idea that the preclear should be able either to handle or penetrate or go through such a condensation or disperse it or form new condensations at will. Now, all of these things require what? That the preclear be able to handle energy. If your preclear cannot handle energy, he will inevitably, on the no-to-sex scale, fall below effort. This is obvious, isn't it? There's nothing more obvious than the fact that a preclear who can't handle energy would be subjected to or graft below the level of that energy. Am I right? All right. If this individual, then, is unable to handle energy, he would fall below the effort band. Effort is the manifestation of energy. We don't much care whether we differentiate between force and effort. This differentiation is very important to the physicist, and it's not important to us. When we talk about force or effort, we mean simply this: particles in flow or rigid. That's all. Now, that means then that your preclear, stuck below effort, would not be able to handle force particles of any kind. And what do you think perception depends upon? It depends upon a force particle, an effort particle, if you please, any way you want to call this thing. It depends upon particles. Perception is done by particle flows. A preclear who cannot see must therefore be below the effort band on the no down to sex scale. Now, we take this no to sex scale, we find out that it plots on the tone scale and simply makes a wider range tone scale. Now, we go up to the top of this tone scale and we get tone 40 on the tone scales which you see around, such as those in Science of Survival and later editions, also in self-analysis. You see tone 40, and then we slide down into the perception band, the lookingness band. That means look, hear, any type of perception. And we go down from that into the emotional band. Now, it's the emotional band which is stressed in Book 1, Science of Survival, and other publications. But as we go on down through the emotional band, which extends from serenity down through enthusiasm and so forth on down to apathy, we then run into the solid effort band and run into what we might call the first manifestations of matter. So we go down through the emotional band and we get into an effort band. In other words, there is no emotion. The condensation of these particles has become such that the emotional content is practically zero, but the force content is very great. Now we go down below this, still applying the no-to-sex scale to the tone scale, and we run into what we're calling thinkingness. Of course, a person thinks and knows way above on the tone scale, but the point is that when we get into this thinkingness, we're actually talking into figure. We're talking about the type of thinkingness which Homo sapiens does. All this thinkingness has as a goal the avoidance or handling of barriers. That's the only goal thinking has. There isn't any other. You can think this over and look at it any way you want to, but you'll discover, for instance, that an individual is walking down the street and he's thinking how he had better cross the street. Well, he's thinking about a course amongst particles, flowing cars and so forth, you see. Avoidance of these particles and so on. As this avoidance becomes predominant and the handling becomes less and less, we have the individual then below the effort band, which is to say he's in the figure band. Now, here's your compulsive obsessive. Now, let's see, what am I going to do? I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'll have to figure it out somehow or other. The future is something, and if I don't worry about this, I will... Yep. And all that amounts to is, how can I avoid effort? How can I avoid effort? How can I avoid effort? How can I... If you want an inventive genius, get somebody who was lazy as hell. Or get somebody who was around tone 40. Either one of them, the top one around 40, just for the fun of it, and the bottom one for the necessity of it, will invent things. Don't expect much invention to take place in between. Now, we go down from thinking, which is figure, and my God, we get into eating, don't we? And down below that, we get into sex. Well, what's happened here? Now, although I gave you yesterday a breakdown above and below of the notice sex scale and just a graphic manifestation of how this could be, let's see that this breakdown takes place also in the notice sex scale right down there at effort. In the middle of the effort band, we turn from the individual's own effort over to dependence on exterior efforts. In other words, other determined effort, right in the middle of the effort band. Now, you see, the lower half of the effort band would be other determined effort. Figure is other determined effort. Eating is other determined effort and is the effort to survive on somebody else's effort. And sex is a complete abandonment of the use of effort by the present form, but the dedication of the present form solely to the creation of another form, which in itself may hopefully someday handle effort. The only hope there is on this scale actually is in sex. It's the only future you get on that scale. All right. What is a barrier? A barrier, as you understand it and as I understand it in common parlance, is some sort of a barricade, some material object which prevents one from going to another place, a brick wall, a concrete abutment, a mountain. Any one of these things would be considered barriers. Actually, the definition of barrier is quite wider than this. A barrier is anything which prevents egress or ingress. Keeps you from getting out, keeps you from getting in. And that, of course, could consist then of various barriers. Not only solid barriers, but there could be the barrier called distance. A wonderful way to make a trap would be to make an unlimited distance in all directions. Nothing would get into it, nothing would get out of it. If anything got into it, it'd never get out, that's certain. And so distance itself could be a barrier. If you want to see SOP 8-5, heave a long sigh of relief at the idea of distance. Just work him on distance for a little while and get off that horrible weariness that ensues at the mere thought of taking a long trip in a car, train, or something like that. Now, that's very important to these people, distance. Distance is a barrier. Now, there's another barrier, of course, and that's time. And time is the most vicious of all barriers because I wonder how on earth you'd get across 1776 to get into 1750. You just don't have anymore that formation of particles, which by postulate we call 1776. We don't even have it in our nation's courts. Anyway, the main difficulty of your preclear, however, is... At first glance, if he is a difficult case, his main difficulty is not with this wide concept of time and this wide concept of distance. He can't confront these things if he is having a difficult time of it. The only barrier which he can confront is something like a brick wall. That's the barrier which he immediately and intimately confronts and understands. It's within his range, you might say. It's something he can perceive, he can feel it, he can know it's there. He can only conceive of distance and so on, and it has no reality to him. All right, what about this case, then, that is having a difficult time? And what about any case that hangs up? And what, if you please, about any case that doesn't get well rapidly under processing? Well, let's make a graphic representation of it and recognize that the case is hanging up below a barrier. Just that. If you please, let's understand this with great thoroughness. He's hanging up below a barrier. As we go up the emotional scale, we see quite well represented that the ridges are barriers. They are barriers through which the person conceives that he has to go. It's a very funny thing, but it actually plots against distance, this person's advance into freedom, because we have distance as part of communication. And if he is capable of reaching wider distances, he is then capable of wider communication. But who can reach wider distances if he finds himself barricaded all about by ridges? What condition is your preclearing? He is barricaded by ridges. Why is he barricaded by ridges? Because he's havingness set up as so-and-so and so-and-so. You see that? He's pulled this in. Now, having pulled in these ridges, now he feels he can't get through them or out of them. He doesn't know what's on the other side of these ridges. He has barriers, and they are barriers to his own knowingness. Space itself, you see, is a barrier to knowingness, but when it gets down to a condensed form, then that's a real barrier to knowingness. What does the prisoner know about the outside of the prison? After a man has been in prison for 20 years, it's a great shock to him to go out through those walls. It just doesn't necessarily limit the distance he can move. It limits his knowingness. It limits it much more arduously than space itself. Space is the first limitation, but now you take space and also put a barricade in it, and you have a real limitation of knowingness if the individual can't go through this barricade. Well, for our purposes as auditors, and from here on, let's be very, very clear about this point. What are you trying to do with a preclear? Well, let's consider a preclear an obstacle race. And let's find out that your preclear, if he's having any difficulty whatsoever with pictures, perceptions, any difficulty he is having that difficulty because he cannot go forward through certain barricades. And these barricades are the ridges of the sex to know scale. The most important of these barricades then would be, as you generally sort them out, would be the lowest one that you'd have any real difficulty with, which is effort itself. He has gotten to a situation, perhaps, where he is surrounded by hard barricades, condensed energy, which themselves have begun to approximate matter. They are standing waves which are actually forming matter. And this individual, being afraid of and fighting back from energy particles themselves, of course, does not advance through any such barrier to a further knowingness. And we find this preclear in his head, nailed down and surrounded by ridges. The manifestation by which you would understand this case clearly is that he is unable to perceive. Now, this individual may be some little distance into this. He may be deeper, or he may be shallower, preclear to preclear, as far as the actual barrier of effort is concerned. And don't think that a person, just because he isn't black and so forth, is necessarily free to handle all kinds of efforts. I know a case one time who was the laziest human being I think I have ever met, who was wide open as far as sonic and visio and so forth is concerned. The laziest human being alive. This person also was sexually obsessed and so forth. And obviously this person, however, having lots of visio and sonic and so forth, obviously was not obsessed with effort particles to a degree where there was no possible visio. So forth, obviously. Oh, no, you don't. No, you'll have to look downscale from effort and find out that we have inverted sex to an entire other determinism so the whole world can be viewed delusively on other determinisms. That's your dub-in case. Perfect visio can't work. Can't handle effort. Now, this was this case. This case, by the way, was a baffler to auditors. Utterly baffled. They just didn't know whether they were going or coming with this case. And yet, this person could actually handle no effort. This person was lazy, parasitic, so forth. He had a dub-in case. All this person's facsimiles were entirely delusive. They were other people's universes. Other human beings had moved in so solidly on this person that the facsimiles themselves belonged to other people. They didn't have their own facsimiles at all. They were other people's facsimiles. All right. Now, if we can run into a case like that, then we certainly need some kind of a common denominator to diagnose cases, don't we? Where is he on this barricade? Series of obstacles. Well, we have this common denominator for your bad off case. Can't work. And that, by the way, is very definitely the common denominator of all neurosis, obsession, compulsion, inhibition, and psychosis when it is inhibitive to a person's forward progress and survival. That is the common denominator. Can't work. Now, if you recognize that, the activities of a psycho will never puzzle you henceforward. He's trying to avoid effort. Whether it's the effort in a facsimile or the effort of pushing a broom, we don't care. But he is avoiding effort to such a degree that he has resigned all rationality, because rationality in itself may involve having to confront some effort particles. And they just can't do it. All right, let's look at this preclear then as an obstacle race. Let's look at it as a steeplechase. If you could just mock up a steeplechase for your preclear, it would run something like this. You start him out on the starting line, and the first barrier that you jump him across will be effort. Because as far as sex and symbols and thinkingness are concerned, these are the mental images which represent barriers which a person will meet later on. So you might as well just tackle effort overtly, and we find out that that's the first hedge on this steeplechase. And now we go a little bit further on the steeplechase, and we find the next barrier, which is, of course, the next standing ridge as we go up the tone scale, which is apathy. And we go up a little further. And by the way, there are a lot of little hedges in there, but we needn't pay much attention to them. We go to the barrier of grief. And when we go up from grief, we then go to the barrier of anger. And when we go from the barrier of anger, we go from a barrier which could be called by a combined tone, boredom conservatism. That is a ridge. Now we go up above that, and of course we find higher barriers. Well, boy, they sure have ceased to be important by the time you get up that high, and you bring your preclear around the track to home base, which is total perception, excellent knowingness. You do this by jumping these barriers. It's just a steeplechase, that's all. If you can consider an auditing session a steeplechase, well, you're all set. Well, this would be all very well if you had a technique that did it easily, wouldn't it? Just be fine if you had an easy technique to do this. How would you like to do it by straight wire? I do it by straight wire and produce such an effect upon your preclear as to utterly amaze him as to what his actual effort level is, what his actual anger level is. Very easy to do. Very, very easy to do. The key words of it would simply be, what effort would you be able to consider? What effort wouldn't you be able to object to? Or what effort wouldn't you object to? Or you could say, what could you do that you wouldn't object to doing? In brackets. Now, what's a bracket? That's preclear for himself, another for himself, others for others, another for the preclear for somebody else. That's a total bracket. But let's just look at it and find out that this resolves so sloppily When we're working with the effort band, it's so non-directional and so tumbled over and twisted that you can just run a couple of sides of the bracket and you'll be happy enough about it. And that's two sides of the bracket, of course, is what effort you'll be able to consider and what effort somebody else be able to consider. Now you can actually get to specific people. You could say, what effort would your mother be able to consider? I mean, just as sloppily as that. And you'll get all kinds of manifestations. Now you'll find out that the first effort you run into with the individual, he isn't objecting to other determined effort. He would engage in the effort, all right, if something else was compelling him into it or pulling him around. He doesn't object to moving his hand if some exterior force, like his ring, is moving it. On a bad case, such as a step level 5, 6, something like that, this is the band of super apathy, which you run into the second you say, what effort wouldn't you mind doing? What wouldn't you mind doing? What effort could you confront? Or any one of these phrases which simply sums up to the preclear this question. Let's confront effort and find out what you actually can tolerate in terms of effort. And we just go ahead and ask him that. Now, what could somebody else tolerate? Matter of effort. No matter how you phrase that command, that's your goal, you see. What could you do? Now you could say, what could you do without being stopped? And you've got your barriers in there directly as a straight wire question. But let's not worry about the phrase. Let's take a look at the theory itself instead of memorizing this phrase. And that's why I'm not giving you a beautifully pat phrase. But you think about it. Here we have to tap the concept of other determined effort and reverse it around till the individual can tolerate self-determined effort. The individual himself has to be in good shape in a band where he can actually not only handle his own effort, but create it. And he's never going to under the sun if he's stuck with sex reading, which is other determined effort. That's getting effort from elsewhere. That's getting energy from elsewhere. Wheaties, the breakfast of champions. Wheaties, the breakfast of psychotics. Now, where we confront a difficult preclear, we are confronting a system of barriers, and the reason why your preclear hangs up in boredom, hangs up in conservatism, hangs up in that band and doesn't go forward to an enthusiasm about life is solely and exclusively because he has confronted a barrier at this point which he isn't going through. But it was a much earlier barrier he should have been taken through if he's really hung up on that problem. He's probably stuck at least on the difficult side of apathy and will have to go on through it. Now, how would you run that? Let's see, what could you be apathetic about? Let's run grief. What would it be all right to cry over? And find an individual would have to have the whole civilization destroyed before he could cry, and that's as good a reason as any other why some of these madmen are out here trying to destroy the civilization, just so they can cry, you know, we've got to, you know, poor fellows, poor little babies, we killed them all. Yeah, we got our diploma at MIT, and now they're all dead, so we can cry. Which is look a little bit extreme as a process. It's hard on the babies. Anyway, we have to ask then, what would you be able to get angry about? What would you permit other people to be angry about? See? And then we'd have to say, what would you be bored about? What could you be conservative about? What would you permit other people to be bored or conservative about? But those are simply the upper ranges of the tone scale, and that's just the way you phrase it. My God, you are not going to find a preclear. You're not going to find a preclear on the upper level of effort. So you just might as well specialize in that one and take it as they come. Because that's where they are. Now, when you've done that, you've restored the preclear's ability to work. And if all you could do with Scientology is restore the ability of a preclear to work without becoming tired, you've done it. You've taken the whole civilization by storm. So it's not a small goal you're going forward to. Now, you change people's different attitudes toward effort to good attitudes toward effort, you really be doing something as an auditor, believe you me. Okay, now continuing on with these various manifestations which you're trying to overcome in the preclear, We must keep in mind that the first manifestation you were trying to overcome then in any preclear, and let's just lay this down as a little law on the thing. This is the kind of a not natural law. It's kind of an auditing law, and let's just lay it down. The first manifestation you're trying to overcome with this preclear is spinning by reason of your auditing. That's the first manifestation we're trying to overcome with a preclear. Hey, don't overlook that one, will you? We don't want that manifestation because it can be done much more easily than you could conceive possible. Now, I can tell you this, who are professional auditors and going to be professional auditors, without frightening you to death, but if you were to tell Johnny Q. Public out here that you had enough weapons in your hands to spin somebody down and in such neat dispatch that he'd probably never know what hit him, it might frighten them of the whole subject of Scientology. And if somebody tries to turn Scientology around and do something else with it, they better be frightened of this subject. You could make a slave world the like of which you never heard of, which is why we're teaching Scientology. You realize I'd never be here teaching you anything at all if there wasn't a lot of danger inherent in this particular field. You know that? That's the truth. I would have simply been content to release the information and sit back and go on about my ways. In the first place, I am a creature of change, if nothing else. And I just dearly love to get into odds and ends of this is and that. So I just as soon tomorrow go down and take over the press department of the local paper, go out to Hollywood and write a movie for Lana Turner, as snap my fingers. It'd just be something that would just be... Actually, sometimes when I look at examination papers, I get in units and look at some of the auditing right after the unit is finished. I wish I had. But all snide remarks to the contrary, this subject is not dynamite. Dynamite was invented by a fellow who wanted to make war so terrible that nobody would fight it. Actually, there are about 8 or 9 weapons of this character up the line. People invent them. I imagine the fellow who invented the stone axe was trying to make war so terrible that nobody'd fight. And Hotchkiss, his machine gun, you know, that was to make war so terrible nobody could fight. Nobel with his peace prize, you know, he's a nice fella. His prolixity for inventing explosives had as its original goal, making war so horrible that nobody would dare fight it. And then he saw people chucking his explosives around at each other, and he went into a complete decline and began to offer a peace prize. He figured ideas might come up sometime sooner or later that would defeat war. And he went to his grave a failure, too. Well, anyway, the main thing about it is we're not trying to make Scientology so horrible that nobody will go insane. That's the goal of psychiatry. Make insanity so horrible that nobody will go crazy. That actually is their goal. I just don't happen to be throwing a quip in here to amuse you. Bedlam, for instance, with its sticks and stones and chains in the old days, had that as a definite goal in his treatment. Now, here, of course, that makes people go insane. You say it's horrible over there, and there they go. They manufacture what they fear. So here's your first thing about it, is to use your weapons well enough so that you don't spin somebody in like mad. Well, if you use straight wire and things like this, you're not going to do any harm to somebody. But supposing you used a very complicated process, one process or another, and got the preclear in a beautiful state of re-stimulation, and then invalidated him and then evaluated for him with great rapidity, and then inhibited him from remarking or protesting against it, sort of pushed his face in it after you did that to him, so forth. If this preclear were within a perilous shooting range of insanity itself, and so forth, the fellow could spin. Now, recognize that this could happen, if you please. Fortunately, only the forthright intention to make somebody crazy will bring about insanity by reason of auditing. Get me very clear on this. Only the forthright, overt, or covert intention on the part of the auditor could bring about insanity by reason of the use of Scientology. That's the fact. But you can bring about some mighty uncomfortable 2, 3, 10 days for a preclear, and in some cases several months, by misauditing in this direction, taking a process which is very much too heavy and slugging a preclear around with it, you know, and then getting him into restimulation and then deciding you can do nothing about it. You decided his condition was desperate, so you became desperately complex in your auditing, and you could do something to him then which would make him very, very uncomfortable. Now, do you know that Dianetics was in the hands of about, something in excess of 250,000 Americans? It was. And I'll give you the two cases of spin which resulted from it. I'll show you that the tension actually has to be overt. There are two cases of spin that resulted from it, which came to my attention directly. And these two cases of spin were very, amusingly horrible. One guy started a co-audit with his brother and audited him right straight out of the book, he said, and his brother went right straight to the spin bin. Zing. The reason I heard about this is because this fellow was going to sue me because I said that anybody could do it. I didn't say that, by the way, the publisher did. But it was his little gift to humanity. He wanted more book sales. The truth of the matter was that this individual was in a frame of mind whereby he probably would have taken a gun to me because I'd obviously driven his brother insane. Well, somebody came along like Wing Angel back in those days. It might even have been Wing. And audited this guy. Heard that he was going to make a lot of trouble, went over, bird-dogged him, audited him, and my golly, the first thing that turns up, really, is a tremendous desire to ruin his brother. That's the first thing that turned up out of the preclear. Just this tremendous desire, I mean, just an obsessed, insane, screaming glee at the thought of ruining his brother. Well, the auditor didn't even audit in that direction. That's just what was lying on top of the case. And after some auditing, read book one again and went over to the sanitarium, got a hold of his brother, audited him out of his spin, got him out of the sanitarium, and wrote me one of the pleasantest letters you ever wanted to read on the subject of the wonders of Dianetics. All right, that's one particular case. Now, another case of spin had to do with a medical doctor. We had quite a bit of trouble in this particular direction. But he went down to the airport and put his wife on the plane for Elizabeth to receive some auditing. She arrived in Elizabeth's cycle. And we tried to audit her, and it seemed like the more we tried to audit her, why, the worse off she got. Until I took cognizance of it and realized that something very light was desirable here and did some old-time straight wire, at which moment we find her husband had thrown her into an attempted abortion incident at the local airport the moment before he put her on the plane. He audited her halfway into it and left her there. Well, when I first realized that she was spinning, I had a wire sent to this character, this joker, and I told him I was going to butter him all over the side of a barn if I could lay my hands on him, merely for lying to us. This was before I discovered this other. He said his wife was in excellent condition, and we received off that plane a sanitarium case, and we were not in the sanitarium business. And so this guy, resignedly wanting suicide too, I suppose, got himself on a plane and came in through to Elizabeth. In the meantime, while he was in transit, I found this other incident. Can you imagine taking a girl who feels a little bit spinny and neurotic? She'd been in several institutions already. auditing her into the toughest incident he could find in the bank, sticking her good and proper, invalidating her, and then sort of rudely and crudely shoving her on board a plane without even telling her goodbye, which also helped spin the devil out of her, and dropping this in our laps. Well, I got a hold of this guy, and he comes in. He wants to know. He's read something about this, and one of his colleagues had tried it with some success, and he just thought his wife, you know, might benefit from it. And I says, "You come in and sit down." Closed the door, and I said colloquially, "Would you mind giving me the idea behind your activities with regard to Dianetics?" I said it very colloquially, however. And he, the great scientist, wanting to confer the favor on us of letting us inform him, found himself on a little bit of a spot. And I found out that this fellow had beaten his wife. He had done everything he possibly could to her in order to get her into a sanitarium and keep her there forevermore, and Dianetics was the last hope. And this came out with him, more or less on this kind of a computation. The only safe place for women was far away under a physician's care, and so he'd become a physician, and this was the perverted purpose of his life. He'd become very interested in the mine and so forth, just so you could keep women under surveillance, you know, and put straitjackets on them when you had to, and so on. I didn't care where he was stuck in the track. We got him up to present time where he hadn't been for years and straightened out his wife and sent him home, forgot about him. But those were two incidents. Now, possibly you know of other incidents. Any incident I know of, however, came out in the wash within 6 months or a year after I heard about it, and none of them were terribly major. But these two incidents, both of them, were completely overt. I'm not just reminiscing here. I'm trying to drive a point home that it required an overt intention to do anything permanently damaging to a preclear. Well, let's take a look at auditing itself and discover that it is one use of Scientology. Now, supposing that you were Major General Komkos Adamanov of the Russian Gay Pay, whatever it is now, NKVD, that VD on the end there's always amused me, and supposing that you really wanted to wash somebody out and spin them in, and you had lying before you all of the beautiful, subtle mechanisms of Scientology, do yourself a job, couldn't you? You could lay one in that had never come out. Or could you? Could you or couldn't you? Look, in the face of no auditing in the world, yes, yes, you could. But in the face of an even vaguely informed auditor, no, you couldn't. Because I have seen stuff pulled out of preclears by rank, horrible auditors that straighten them out on the subject of implantations. Now, implantation isn't the only thing you could do to a preclear, of course, but it'd be the most effective one. You can just take and plant engrams in the guy. The efficiency of the Russians is remarkable. They took Vogler, remember? It took, I think, 70 days for them to do something to him. This is idiocy. It should only take about 7 minutes. If you really knew your stuff, it would only take 7 seconds. But we were not able to get our hands on him as an organization, but I dare say some auditors gotten to him since, because you'd be surprised how far auditors do get. And if it took them that long to lay him in, it certainly wouldn't take us that long to bring him out. So the information is dangerous only if the auditing skill and the information itself is suppressed. Only if we don't have any auditors around is the information dangerous. Only if this information is cut out of circulation does it become dangerous. If Dianetics and Scientology existed as completely disreputed objects, that is to say, they'd been released, but all the medical profession agreed perfectly that it was a bunch of humbuggery and fraud, And everybody around in authority was of this condensed opinion. And if the public itself was utterly sold on the idea that it was total humbuggery, we would have a very dangerous thing here. We would have the information leading to the involvement or recovery of the human mind out of circulation by whatever cause or means. The next time somebody from the AMA starts to yap around at some preclear, telling him how much of a fraud all this is and how much of a fake all this is, you really ought to pay him a call. You shouldn't ever take anything like that lying down. You really ought to pay him a call. You just say, what if the actual data which underlies human behavior were known, but was all suppressed in such a way that it could be used to ruin people? And if such as you had invalidated any remedy for it, then we would have made a slave state, wouldn't we? Well, now you don't have to tell him anything that crudely, because it's above his level of comprehension. What you should say to him is, what the goddamn hell is the idea of you talking to one of my patients? Do you want me to go around the neighborhood and talk to yours? He'll understand that. I'm sorry I swore there at the moment. Those aren't the words you should use. I'll get a transcription sometime from Quantico to brace you up as to how you ought to be emphatic on this subject. The Marines are pretty good at this. New First Sergeant once could swear for 15 minutes consecutively without even repeating an article or a pronoun. All right. Now, then, you exist as an absolute necessity if this knowledge exists. That's right. It's whether or not we had any goals or not. It wouldn't matter. If we didn't have any goals, we would still have to have auditors if this information existed. Quite the other way, you exist on a much higher purpose than that. That is not your purpose. But if people were trying to knock auditors out of existence and knock them away from an actual understanding of the human mind, you would have a political situation there which in itself would be dynamite. I call to your attention that the Sharif Mohammedanism for 300 years in the Middle East had the entire population of the Middle East and a better part of Asia under complete domination. You know this word today. You know the name of its leaders, first leaders today, under an English word, assassin. And the Mohammedan cult there was ruled by a man called Ashishin. And he used a mental mechanism to imbue individuals with such fervor that they would go out and execute any and every ruler who opposed his whim. For 300 years, Asia was under this tremendous, arduous rule. The actual stronghold finally succumbed to force, I think, in the hands of Tamerlane, Timuri Lang. And the point I'm making is, though, here was exactly the same kind of mechanism. We had Mohammedanism, which taught paradise and 40 dark-eyed houris and rivers of milk and honey. Ashishin built such a garden, drugged young men, had them suddenly wake up in the garden, and for a day or two would give them the delights of existence. And then, having demonstrated to them utterly that they had now come to paradise, would say the only way they could get back to paradise was to kill in the name of Allah. And then they would put the young man back to sleep in the garden and transport him, while drugged, to some enormous distance. And he would wake up in some city with the orders, you might say, firmly impressed in his mind, that he was to kill King Pofwoff or somebody. And, of course, one of his goals was to get killed to get back to paradise. And so he would simply go through any quantity of guards or anything else to slit the reigning ruler's throat. And a slight note from Ashishin to any ruler in Asia, who knew well then that any assassin could be commanded to do his death, would send any quantity, any number of camel loads of gold, spices, and silks to the stronghold of Ashishin. And the political philosophy of the times and so forth was tremendously controlled by this one silly, stupid mechanism. You say, how dumb can they get? Well, that was the belief of the day. And they used the belief of that day to enslave the peoples of that day. You could take today Scientology and dream up enough mechanisms to make Ashishin look stupid and powerless. But only so long as the information itself was hidden. It could never happen if the information were in free circulation. So anything which tends to suppress this information aids and abets an effort to use this information for secret and disreputable purposes. Now, therefore, and thereby, you should never aid and abet such a thing by being a lousy auditor. As long as I'm being colloquial in this particular lecture, let me be very colloquial about it. If you're a bad auditor, and if you don't know what you're doing, and if you lose your nerve, and you don't know your auditor's code, and so forth, you are lending support to the popular belief that people in control would love to impress people with, the effect that Dianetics and Scientology are fraud. I don't care what people think of me. My name is just a trade name. But what on earth business you would have helping the AMA, the OGPEU, and other control organizations, I don't know. But there's many an auditor, actually, who seems obsessed with the idea that he's got to give the boys a big hand. He's got to get in there and do such a rotten job on pre-clears that everybody will now be utterly convinced that Dianetics and Scientology are no good. Now, those are rough words, but that's actually what happens. You go out, you get a pre-clear. I don't care whether you charge him any money or not, but you don't do him any good. You've just aided and abetted what control mechanisms would love to have the popular opinion. That there was no science of the mind, that man could not understand himself, and that freedom was therefore impossible. These are all synonymous. Freedom's impossible, there is no science of the mind. Synonymous statements. Ignorance is strength. Well, you got a little further responsibility then, haven't you, than just making yourself an interesting life or something of that sort. If you have this information, use it well. The process of using it well is to use it in such a way that your pre-clear continues to progress as far as the case goes. He continues to progress. You don't get static conditions. Now, you don't have to share this responsibility if you don't want to. But if you're going to audit somebody, do a good job. That's all it really amounts to. If you're going to audit somebody, do a good job. The way you do a good job is to enter a case where it should be entered and carry it through to its logical conclusion. And that's the only way you do a good job. You just do what you should do at the moment. You are in the enviable position of being able to be effective. This hasn't ever really happened before. You can be effective in the field of healing. There are three levels of healing. If a man is, as it says there in book one, if a man is in pain, and you can do something about it, why, the thing to do is, regardless of anything else, you simply do something about it, and you put him to rights. If you can't really do anything to stop his pain, I mean stop the source of the pain, you can at least make him comfortable, which is to say you could administer an opiate, you could put him in a more comfortable bed, you could get him warm, you could do a lot of other things. You see, if you could make him comfortable, that's your second echelon. Your first echelon, remember, is be effective. And your second echelon is to make him comfortable. And what if you can't even make him comfortable? Then you can sympathize with him. And that's the third level. Now, those are actually three levels of healing. You are either effective or you make him comfortable. And if you can't do either of those, why, you sympathize with him. And that's that. Now, you don't have to be in a position where you sympathize. You don't even have to be in a position where you make the guy comfortable. Because you can be effective. Well, what's the best course of auditing, then, to accomplish these things? As from any rambling discourse on the thing, what is the best course of auditing? Best course of auditing would be this. You establish two-way communication with the pre-clear. To discover if he has a present-time problem so oppressive that he is not really able to concentrate on you. To remedy his ability to take orders and then give orders to himself, which is opening procedure. Then to remedy any quasi-neurotic, psychotic imbalance which he might have with rather light processes until you're very sure that they're not there. Now, you would have discovered whether or not this existed while administering opening procedure, and opening procedure itself does straighten it out. You could just take your finger off of it, practically, if you did opening procedure very well. But just to be on the safe side, having handled something like an opening, you've scouted the idea of the present time problem, you've handled opening procedure and so forth, just to be on the safe side, and to bring him up tone scale a little bit, I might give him a few minutes on the next to the last list of self-analysis. Why? Because it will break a psychotic up to a neurotic state. It will break a neurotic state up to a state which is supportable, simply by giving an individual some realities. Now, I just handle it that way, just on the idea that I was being efficient. And the reason I would do it that way is because that is efficient. I might get a sleeper, you know, one that's really there that I didn't quite detect, in a fairly good-looking body, pretty good mock-up, living on somebody else's mock-ups entirely, without any slightest semblance of their own facsimiles. An ostensible wide-open case. I don't say that you'll run into this case. This case wouldn't exteriorize, by the way. It wouldn't do a lot of other things. But I don't say that you would run into this case or that it would fool you particularly, and I sure don't say that cases that are wide open, that is to say, that do have good visio and so forth, are in this state, but I would just never take the chance. That's all. In auditing somebody, then, I would follow this process. Just like this. 1, 2, 3, 4. Two-way communication. Find out if they had a present-time problem. That's a good way to establish that communication. Give them a little straight wire that tended to take the edge off of it. What kind of straight wire? Let them talk about it. That's the kind of straight wire. This isn't, oh, nothing searching, like, well, where'd you get that idea? Did your mother do this or that? No, no, just two-way communication. That's therapy itself. He's able to confess. This was the only therapy there was before Dianetics. Really, the only effective therapy there was the idea of the guy confessing, the guy going and talking to the priest about it, the fellow going and talking to the psychoanalyst about it. And that is why everybody rather instinctively turns toward religion when they think of psychotherapy, because it's the only effective psychotherapy that existed on Earth before Dianetics. All right? You let him confess, in other words. Just let him talk about his present-time problem until you're fairly sure that the edge is off of it and he isn't terribly worried about it, and then take him into opening procedure for 2 minutes or 2 hours, whatever seemed to be indicated, and then go immediately into a little bit of the next to last list self-analysis, just as the opening gun to giving him thought-like processes, and then I would go in immediately into the solution of first ARC, just, you know, viewpoint straight wire. And then when I was real sure he could take it right in the chin, I would give him this steeplechase over the barriers. And make sure I got him through that effort barrier by asking him what kind of efforts would he dare consider. And just going on with brackets from that and taking him right on up the tone scale. On this, falling back occasionally on viewpoint straight wire. And that's the way I'd audit him. In other words, I would audit him that way because I would be being effective. If you want to be effective, you'd audit more or less in that pattern.